Welcome to episode 18 of the Get a Grip on Lending podcast. On today's show, we have Ira Greenberg from Keystone Technologies. Yeah, he's the CEO. He also brought along his pal, Josh Brown, the VP of Sales of Keystone Technologies. And Greg, me, Ira, and Josh, it was four lighting guys talking lighting. What were we talking about? Well, we talked about the future of the lighting business. We talked about the challenges of manufacturing lighting equipment in the continental U.S. We talked about warranties. We talked about a bunch of stuff, manufacturing. It's a really good show. I won't give you anything more, but what I will say is that this episode of the podcast is sponsored by who? Yeah, come on, man. Keystone Technologies. Thanks, Ira and Josh, for supporting us from the beginning. And I want to tell you about what? Sign Hero, their T5HO and T5HE LED tube replacements. What? Come on, man. With Sign Hero, I'm so passionate about this product. Look, all you do, you cut all the wires going to one side of the sign. You cut all the wires going to the other side of the sign. You grab one side, you put line voltage on one, you put the neutral on the other, and then you slam in the Sign Hero tube and you're done. 50,000 hours life, 50% energy savings, 360-degree illumination, and Keystone's got all the different sizes. Come on, man. What's left? Science. Right. Guess what? Josh came on the show, and you know what he told me? Huh, I didn't know this. But Josh Brown is a graduate of LS1. That's right. Keystone's a NILD member. Josh took LS1, and he basically said he went from 0 to 60 real quick because of LS1. You should take LS1, too. You should join the National Association of Innovative Line Distributors. But without any further ado, what? Come on, man. NAILD.org. NAILD.org. LS1. Hey, we got Ira Greenberg and Josh Brown. Episode 18, Get a Grip on Lighting. Welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, Ira and Josh.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Say hi to Greg Eric, the co-host.
Greg, good day.
Good afternoon, Greg. How you doing?
Josh and Ira, good.
Josh. So Keystone was has been around for a while in this business, 70 years. Ira, how are you related to Marvin Spielman or Harold Fox?
Marvin is my mother's father, and Harold is Marvin's brother-in-law.
And how, did you hear the family story about how they were in the war? Were they in the war together?
They were not. They both my grandfather and his brother-in-law grew up in the Philadelphia area, served in World War II, and were looking for something to do when they returned from the service. So they actually had some friends in the electrical hardware business. And they went to their friends in the electrical hardware business and said, are there any things that you sell a lot of and can't get a hold of? And this was in the mid 40s when fluorescent lighting was just starting to become a thing. And they unanimously said, yeah, lighting ballasts. And my grandfather and my great uncle had no idea what a ballast was, did a little bit of research, realized that GE was the company that basically had the market. So they bought some GE product, put a Keystone label on it. They made up a company called Keystone. We're from Pennsylvania, which is the Keystone State. So they put their own label on it.
Yeah, okay.
And they weren't intending to sell that particular unit, but they went around town asking electrical wholesalers and fixture manufacturers if they had an interest in this product.
Old fashioned market research, man.
That's right. It doesn't get any more raw than that.
No.
So sure enough, there was demand. And Philadelphia at the time was also a hotspot for lighting fixture manufacturers. There were several lighting fixture companies with long roots in the lighting trade that started in the Philly area.
So you're telling me a Greenberg married the countess of the Keystone lighting business? Like that you guys, there's a Greenberg married in, right?
My grandfather's, you know, his last name is Spielman. It's my maternal grandfather. Mm-hmm. And so my father, married my mother, came into the business in the 70s. And at that point, you know, when they first started manufacturing, they were actually manufacturing out of my great uncle's garage. Moved out of there in short order. I don't think.
What year is this?
This was still in the 40s. It was just probably a year or two before they had to move out because if you've ever seen manufacturing of fluorescent ballast. It's a messy operation, you know, steel and wire, and it's heavy and it's loud. And so that didn't last long in the garage, but they moved to G Street in Philadelphia, in the northeast section of Philadelphia. And, you know, from there they grew, and then eventually they grew out of that facility and moved out to what at the time was really farm country, about 45 minutes outside of Philadelphia. Hmm. And so that came into the business in the 70s and, you know, continued to run the manufacturing operations. And I came in 2001, and it's been a good run.
How many family members have worked in the business since then?
Oh gosh. So probably, well, three generations. So that's something we're really proud of, that we're a third generation business.
You know, that means you have to destroy it, eh? You know, the old legend, eh? The first generation starts it, the second one grows it, and the third one destroys it, right? So
yeah,
you got some pressure on you. You have some pressure.
My first goal is to make sure I don't destroy it. Maybe seven or eight family members over the course of time. Right now, there are I've got four family members, three others besides myself in the business.
Cool. And was there a battle between you for the CEO-ship of it, or?
No. It was all of us really understand our roles, and
everybody knows that everybody knows that Ira's the boss. That's what the reality is, eh?
We all wear many hats, and there's absolutely no ego. I'm happy to pick an order if I have to pick an order, there's no egos around here. It's just get it done.
You know, it's interesting about family businesses, how much, you know, I remember back, so I like to read The Economist, Ira. I don't know if you know that magazine, The Economist magazine. Mm-hmm, so sure. I've been subscribing to that for years. It's kind of like a Forbes in the United States or whatever, yeah. But they were talking about in 2008 in the financial crisis, how much more resilient the European family companies were than the non-family based companies, and how those companies continued to perform and actually benefited. They actually benefited from the crisis in some ways. They grabbed market share from corporate competitors because there was some passion there. There was some caring there. I'm in a family business. I work with my dad every day as well. So,
yeah,
you know, I'm
it's a real privilege, I have to say. And when it works well, it can work extremely well. And I think we're fortunate to be in that situation. And look, we've seen other family businesses that it's been a challenge, but when it works well, it can work exceptionally well. That's fortunately, I'm in that situation.
And so what did you do? Would you work in sales? Did you work in product development? Where did you work before you became
big certainly dog? I cut my teeth in sales. You know, my perspective, and I think our company's perspective, is it all starts with the customer. So the customer is really the one we all report to, and everything from interfacing with customers to understand what products to develop. I always enjoy being in front of customers because you kind of stay on the pulse of where the market is turning to next. And I continue to be heavily involved in sales and product development, marketing efforts. I kind of grew up in the on the sales side of the business.
Who are your customers? Not specifically, but generally.
Sure. We serve two primary market channels. We sell to electrical wholesalers and distributors for basically aftermarket and replacement sales. And we also sell to lighting fixture manufacturers components for them to use our branded Keystone products into their fixtures. I always like to equate our business like the tire business. Goodyear sells the Goodyear branded tire to Ford and Toyota, and Ford and Toyota put the Goodyear tire on the vehicle as it goes down the assembly line. But they also sell to all the gas stations and auto parts repair stores and so forth. So we're very similar in that respect. We sell the OEM fixture trade with our branded product going down the assembly line, coming out into a whole host of different types of fixtures using the Keystone product on the inside. And then we also sell the same product or products that are designed for the aftermarket channel, all with the Keystone brand on it as well.
Which business is bigger?
They're actually split very close, 50-50. But we appreciate the diversification. It's they're somewhat of a symbiotic relationship in the sense that
yeah.
OEMs like to know that the Keystone brand is accepted in the aftermarket, and electrical wholesalers, distributors, lighting showroom type places like to know that our product has passed the rigorous qualification standards of the OEM fixture trade.
How do you position
your
brand?
They both pull out each other quite a bit.
How do you position your brand? Like, do you see yourself as a second tier to Philips and GE in Sylvania, or where are you positioned?
I think certainly from a size perspective, I mean, I can't sugarcoat it. We're not the size of Philips or GE or Sylvania. But I think we're quite a bit more nimble, and we fill certain niches that those guys don't cater to. I think when I started in the business, we were quite a bit lower on the recognition ladder than we are now. So I don't think we're necessarily a Philips level competitor from a scale perspective, but I think from many other aspects, we are more nimble, we're much more easy to do business with. And in some product categories, we actually have quite a bit more to offer from a product standpoint. I think that as our company continues to evolve, our breadth and scale is enabling us to grow up that reputation and that recognition. Well,
what is your brand promise? Like, why, you know, so why is, you know, why are you growing so quickly in a market where other people are shrinking? I mean, I don't mean to throw you a backhanded compliment, but I think it's true. If other people are exiting the business and you're moving full force forward, what is it about your brand promise that it differentiates you and from those other competitors that seem to want to get out of lighting?
I liken it that we are, in some respects, selling our company more than we're selling our products. We focus very heavily on the service aspect of the relationships we develop with our customers. Everything from, how quickly we can turn orders around and quotations, how quickly we get those out, having a really liberal sample policy to help our customers win jobs. But we're also innovative in developing products that developed by talking to and listening to our customers tell us what their pain points are in the marketplace. So we're very adept at focusing on what our customers are telling us and giving us really the direction of where we should be going from a product development standpoint. So I think when people think about Keystone in the marketplace, they think of a company that is exceptionally easy to do business with. I mean, our tagline, you can see it right on my shirt here, it's light made easy. And that really resonates with our customers, and I think they gravitate to us because of that.
Where is the crux of the innovation coming from? Is it coming from your OEM side, or is it coming from the retrofit resale market, distributor market?
Yeah, I think there's a healthy mix of both. The OEM fixture side of the world is a much more technical audience. It's a very engineering heavy customer base that we're servicing there. So there's quite a bit of innovation that's co-developed to understand what their needs are. So certainly we're listening to fixture manufacturers tell us what's needed to put into a fixture. But at the same time, we're listening to our distributor customers and end users as well to hear what it is that they want the products to do, how they want them to perform. Maybe there's certain applications where a product in the marketplace doesn't fit or doesn't meet the certain specification. We're very attuned to listening to what the market is asking for.
Is that what Josh does on the distributor side? Josh, is that what you do? Oh, I just cut off the CEO. Sorry about that.
I had to wake up for a second there. I think adding to Ira's point a little bit about there being a symbiotic relationship between the OEM and distributor side of the business. Certainly on the innovation side, you know, they're building a lot of the driver technology that the OEMs are putting into their fixture. And on the distribution side, we were fortunate enough to encourage a lot of that innovation on the driver side, because really that's a lot of the expertise in the you know, where the technology is based is in the driver. And then we can then take that driver and put it into different form factors. Should it be in, you know, the end cap of an LED tube? Should it be in the end cap of, you know, an HID LED lamp, or, you know, even some fixtures? Then it gives us a lot more ability. It gives us more ability to kind of innovate very quickly because we're working on both sides of the equation there.
Now, I kind of want to generalize things a little bit more. I'm going to ask a few questions, but first of all, you guys are a ballast manufacturer. Do you still have that facility that manufactures ballast?
Ballast is still, we're still in the ballast business.
Where is it?
Our little internal joke is we may be the last people still making T12s.
I think Radionic makes T12s in Chicago too, actually. Do you know those guys?
Yeah, we're familiar. Yeah, look, ballasts are it's still a legitimate business. I can't say it's growing. Certainly not growing anywhere near LED is, but we've cut our teeth in that space, and we'll continue to serve it until the market tells us otherwise.
So, looking back at you guys, how long have you been a manufacturer? And you were in business for 70 years. How many of that has you actually manufactured your own product?
Probably 55-ish, something like that.
Well, okay. When will it make sense to start manufacturing product in the continental United States again, Ira?
You know, that's something we actually consider quite a bit. There are certain product categories that I think make sense. I think there are certain product categories that we're a long way away from returning back to the U.S. And I mean, that evaluation is something that we consider from time to time, depending on what our kind of what our pain points are from a supply standpoint. There are instances when customers may require for certain governmental programs, they need product that's made in the USA. And so those are initiatives that we're undertaking now, is to figure out how we can service those particular customer needs by developing that capability in-house to make those in the USA now.
Let me ask you something. So this business has kind of evolved, Greg. I know I see you there. I'm going to let you come into the conversation soon. Yeah. Don't worry, but I'm just going to throw, I want to throw this out there. So I did a paradigm diagram for the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors in 2011, and I laid out the old paradigm, which was, you know, ballast manufacturer, lamp manufacturer to distributor to the public, whatever, and then OEM. And then it turned, like today, it's really distributors selling to distributors. So you have a Keystone, which is like a master distributor, or a Halco, or these other companies that have no manufacturing in North America. And what they're in the game of is like taking stock, putting it in a warehouse, moving it out, the product improves, taking different stock, bringing it in, moving it out to distributors, and so on. At what point does the inventory management issues and the declining price of LED products make it better to manufacture what you need as you need it? Is that you understand the question I'm asking you, Ira?
I think so. There's a trade-off, right? There's a trade-off in business models. And the challenge with, on one hand, to have all of that manufacturing capability under one roof is nice because you can control certain elements. But on the other hand, sometimes it's very difficult to be nimble and work with strategic partners who also have expertise in manufacturing and innovation as well, where if you're locked into needing to fill the capacity that you developed to manufacture a product, it's difficult to remain really nimble to go find kind of the next generation.
Yeah, but isn't the idea of building machine tools that press and die metal objects and shapes and all that, with the advent of 3D printing and advanced manufacturing techniques, couldn't a manufacturer be as nimble as a distributor in terms of what they're making, and especially with the way electronics are made and that? Isn't there a better way to do it? I mean, I'm on the outside looking in.
I think there's trade-offs. Certainly we could build a really highly flexible manufacturing operation, but that's going to come at a pretty high cost. certainly to deliver product at the expectations people have around prices for LED products now, you really need scale and volume manufacturing in order to hit those price targets. So if there are situations where customers are willing to, are more interested in something that's highly customized or highly unique, but are willing to pay the premium in order to get that that short run or that one-off product, those are the considerations we have. I think that right now we're in a space where customers are driving more towards the cost element of kind of the value proposition, and less interested in having a highly customized or even a semi-customized product. I just don't think that the customer's willing to make that trade-off right now for price versus customization. Now, let's mention go ahead, Josh.
No, I was just going to flip it around on Mike and Greg to see if they'd be willing to, would they sell a lamp that's twice the cost, specifically because it's, made in America?
Greg? I'm Canadian.
If it's needed.
If you make it in Canada, I might consider it, but go ahead, Greg.
If it helps you sell the deal, then yeah, and about the only place it makes sense right now is U.S. government that requires you to. So if not, mm-hmm. No, I wouldn't sell for
you. You know what just popped in my head? Is it, and you guys can say Colligan's gone nuts again, but isn't there an issue in terms of military strategicness here? If the U.S. can't light its own factories, and there's a military issue with a foreign government like China, wouldn't that be a major problem for Americans? I mean, if you couldn't, it's like the old idea of if you don't have your own clothing manufacturing business, what are you going to wear when you go to war? I mean, I think there's a militarily strategic element to artificial lighting that I think we've maybe forgotten about since the Cold War. I don't know. I'm way up there in some crazy space, but I think there's something to that. Ira, what do you think? Am I crazy? Am I going down the conspiracy theory hole here or something?
I wholeheartedly believe that as a country, we're better off with capabilities to make all the things that we need in order to survive. And I always agree that lighting is one of those things we need in order to function as a society. But I don't necessarily think that our country is at risk, certainly today, given the fact that if there's an issue with one country not being able to provide us artificial lighting, if you will, I think the global economy is connected enough where we'd be able to source it elsewhere if we needed to. Granted, there is, the trend we see now is there is a lot of production coming back from Asia to the U.S., which I think is fantastic. And that's partly why I think it's partly our American duty, but I also think it's a strategic decision to try to bring product back into the country. I think building that capability domestically, great for the economy, great for our security, our national security. But there's a trade-off again. That is it? Are we looking for the lowest cost? Are we looking for to make sure that we're kind of servicing and servicing our own needs and developing our own vertical integrations here at home. I think we lived in a connected world where there's a happy medium for both. I don't think we want to be in a completely isolated environment either.
So the one thing I want to get into a little on the manufacturing side again, and I'm going to ask a question and kind of state what I think about it, but typically when you're a lighting or a manufacturer in general, you have a factory and you make a product. Now, what does it take to be a lighting manufacturer? Because to me, most of the companies that we claim to be lighting manufacturers actually don't own or have any part of the factory that they get the product from. They just go out there, they sub it out, and then they bring it in. And they're basically a marketing arm of a manufacturer in China. And there's a few questions that will come from it, but let me know what you think it takes to be a lighting manufacturer.
Yeah, I think the conception around manufacture is a lot more around product design, innovation, and being able to, frankly, being able to find contract manufacturers that meet proper requirements and specifications that can entitle you to bring products to market that are that are best in class. It's easy to find somebody to manufacture a product. It is an immense amount of work to find somebody and develop the relationships to know that you've got a manufacturing partner that that can deliver to world standards. So there's quite a difference. There's a big variance between manufacturers of lighting products. Yeah, so we're Keystone spending quite a bit of effort.
Yeah. Josh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I would just also like to add, there's, I think, another level on the back end that we're not really touching on is what happens after you sell the product. Once, Greg, you take a product, you sell it, and say there is an issue, is the company that you're working with, A, going to know how to answer the right question, and B, take care of it properly? I'm sure there's a lot of companies out there that, may go to China and get a product, and then when there's a failure, they don't have the support team available to even provide you with the right answers and the right testing and the right evaluation.
I think it goes further than that, Josh. I think it goes further than that. I think it goes to the point where they haven't even considered it. They don't care.
Sure.
Like there's the people that are just, hey, 50,000 hours. Yeah. Woo, 50,000. Yeah. And then who cares? They're gone. Toronto has, the city I live in has 750,000 immigrants from mainland China. So there's tons of LED stores all over the place, private label stuff everywhere with all sorts of warranties written on it. And guess what? They haven't been in business for 70 years, okay? So like Keystone or whatever, they've been in business for, 10,000 hours, let's say, right? I mean, so you're right, but how is Keystone different? Like, say it on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. Somebody has a defective product. Is it onesie twosie defective product? Is it you only move in when there's catastrophic failure? What is the point at which the warranty kicks in?
One piece.
Sorry.
Honestly, if there's ever an issue on any size job, we are a one-stop call. Whether it's the power supply, the light source, whatever it is, our reputation of servicing the customer is something we can't put a price tag on. And a lot of times we earn customers through the aftermarket support rather than the upfront sale. We find that we actually create a lot more value with the customer in aftermarket support by them experiencing anything, whether it's a true failure of the product or a kind of an installation failure. There's lots of those that happen, whether something is installed incorrectly or whether something is struck by lightning, which is really nobody's fault. We take care of all those. And I think that just goes to show that we're such a service-oriented company that we do everything we can to strengthen our relationship with our customer through aftermarket support. And our reputation, I think, speaks for itself around that.
Do you guys worry about how much control you have over these contract manufacturers you partner with in China?
Sure, but that's something that's kind of a pillar of our organization in managing those relationships. Many of the relationships have been generational. So, my father is still in the business, but In some cases, it's more than 30 years, so we're not a company that goes on trips to Asia just to look for the next cheapest guy. We develop very long strategic partnerships. There's tons of processes that we have in place that are reviewed regularly for compliance. I think a lot of people don't appreciate the effort it takes to source globally and do it properly.
Yep. And so as far as products, you say your LED tube, for example, do you have multiple contract manufacturers who can make that same item for you?
Yeah. I mean, I can't get into the details with you really where our material is coming from. But we have redundancy.
Come on, Greg. Come on, buddy. Give this guy a break.
I'm not asking.
Come on.
I'm saying, let's say something happened to your primary producer of an LED tube. Just say pick whatever one. I'm not going to pick a brand or item, but what happens if they shut down? You have somebody else who can jump right in, no problem?
Yeah, we have multiple redundancies throughout our entire supply chain on every every category of product.
Let me throw something. Let me change.
I couldn't sleep at night, Greg, if I didn't have that in place.
I gotcha.
How is the declining price of LEDs affecting your business? Like, it seems like for me, I have to sell more and more and more LEDs every year in order to maintain a revenue or even grow. How is Keystone managing that? I mean, the declining price is a problem for, has been noted. If you go to Edison Report, you'll see it right away. How are you guys managing that? Are you selling more and more product every year? Is it, that's a big problem for this business.
So sure. Prices are declining, but volumes are also increasing. You know, look, a declining price is, it's a challenging situation to manage by all means for us, for, I'm sure for you guys as well. Mm-hmm. We find that a lot of our customers don't want to bring in stock because of the situation. We actually find that we can provide, our philosophy is keeping fairly substantial inventories in place to be able to service any size job. And so a lot of our customers turn to us because they don't want to carry the inventory. They depend on us heavily to be the ones to actually have that inventory available. So, look, we also have ongoing cost reduction efforts to make sure that our costs remain in line with current market conditions. And that's something we pay a lot of attention to. I do think that we're, the prices aren't dropping as they have over the last probably 18 to 24 months.
Are you talking percentage-wise or dollar value? Like, because so
well, certainly
if you go down by 10% or whatever a year, eventually that 10% is not very much money wise, you know, as a portion. Are you talking percentage?
And that's it's both. Frankly, that percentage drop, the curve is starting to become less steep, and we're also frankly seeing a lot of upward cost pressures. So I think a challenge that we're facing right now is there are lots of companies out there promoting LED products. And we see right now we're dealing with some electronics components supply issues. So lead times are getting longer and costs are stabilizing or going up in some cases. Certainly as we deal with overseas manufacturing in some respects, we deal with currency inflation and wage growth, but you know, overall, the market, the expectation, it seems like we've all become spoiled, or maybe it's just the opposite of spoiled, around the expectations have been set that prices keep coming down every 3 months. And I really think that expectation needs to be reset, because I don't think that's going
to
be the reality.
Well, there has to be a basement. There has to be a basement to all this.
Oh, for
there
sure.
There has to be a point at which it stops and then maybe rebounds a bit. Josh, what are your distributor clients telling you on your side? Like, in terms of stocking and prices falling, are the markets completely different across the United States?
I mean, certainly a lot of the market volume is driven by the rebates that are in each respective market. But as a whole, you know, I think distributors don't really enjoy the prices dropping any more than we do, because if you make the same margin on a lower cost item, it's just lower dollar volume or dollar numbers. So, yeah, I think as a whole, distributors are feeling the pain, and but they are changing their models a little bit to be a lot more kind of job driven and drop shipping driven. And we've had to adapt to that as well, where they're not maybe touching the material nearly as much as they were with the previous fluorescent technology.
Greg, it seemed like for a while, some of the factories in China that make, and maybe not your product, but are trying to sell now direct into the U.S. And it seemed like it was really intense last year, and it seems like it's died off some. I don't know. Have you guys seen any indication of that, or does it still seem like something that a lot of direct manufacturers in China are trying to come and sell in the U.S.? Give any indication?
I think it's just going to continue to become increasingly more difficult for all of these different companies to survive. What ends up happening is you've got some players start to get larger, and that scale becomes a real advantage. And these smaller companies, while they may be satisfied with lower profit margins or might cut corners in other ways, those businesses usually are not as sustainable. Like we've been in the ballast business for many years. And I remember early on in my ballast days, there was always a new ballast company that was going to come out with the next greatest price and kind of really shake up the market. And inevitably, I could probably name half a dozen companies that did this over time. They were always in the business, made a splash, and then got out of the business. It's just not a sustainable business model. And I think we'll see the same thing. Look, we get emails all day long. I'm sure you guys get emails from the same companies I get emails from, trying to promote different products direct out of China. It's I think these are temporary situations. They're in, they're out. And over time, as the market matures, and I think the market has matured quite a bit, especially in the LED tube space, where you know some of the technology has matured and certainly the pricing has matured. These other companies that are in it for the short term you're going to realize they are only here for the short term.
Well,
There will always be somebody else who wants to come in for a lower price.
Yeah, the barrier to entry is almost too low. For that, like when did I see you in China at the Hong Kong Light Fair or something like that, 2015? Did we see each other there?
Sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah. And after that, I think I brought in some two LED tubes and this sort of thing. And it's like, if you're on my side of the business, I think, first of all, paying in US dollars is hard for us, but on top of that, it's like, it's a different business. So I think there's a model for a Keystone to distributor situation out there, but much in the future. I mean, I think what's going to happen is, so my business has been growing in a shrinking market. Greg's business has been growing in a shrinking market. Keystone's growing in a shrinking market. So I think there's going to be a lot of dead bodies, but I think the good companies will step over them and hire their good employees and so on. In terms of the smart lighting,
it just happens in every space.
Yeah, for sure.
That's just the nature of business.
For sure. Go ahead, Josh. You can jump in there.
If I can also just add to that, I mean, you guys know, LED technology is still in its infancy. There's a lot of companies that have been around for a year or two, and, maybe 5 years ago, they started importing products and just blasting the market with low pricing. Now you're starting to see a lot of those failures come to light, no pun intended, prior to, their five-year warranty. And, obviously bad news spreads a lot quicker than good news. And as more and more of these, smaller companies either, leave the market or their, contractors or end users, have one experience with this bad product, I think it makes it more difficult for some of these newer, LED companies that don't have the testing or, the backbone behind them.
I don't think anybody really knows, though, Josh. I mean, so one of my largest profit centers is a recycling company, and we recycle, okay, because the old LEDs are actually mostly scrap metal. So the stuff that came out in 2013 and 12, it's mostly scrap metal. There's not a lot of plastic and junk in it. So we recycle tons of LEDs. I mean, they're burning out, they're dimming, there's lots of stuff going on. I think the industry has to stop talking about 25 years and 20 years and really put out more of a message of say two or three times the fluorescent tube life. Because you guys probably have 50,000 hour fluorescent tubes you sell, right?
Close to it, yeah.
Yeah, if you say like a 50,000 hour tube, you're talking, 5 to 7 years, something like that. I think the industry could become more realistic. But can I, Greg, you have anything else on this topic or can I change gears here quickly? Because believe it or not, guys, we've already gone 45, 50 minutes. I told you it would go quick.
Change gears.
Yeah. So what's Keystone doing in the smart lighting, the addressable lighting space? Do you guys have anything cooking there?
You want to speak to that, Josh, or would you like me to?
Go for it.
We have actually some exciting stuff to share. I don't really want to pop the cork yet out of the bottle because we're showing some things at Light Fair that we're pretty excited about launching.
You can unveil it first on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. No one will mind about that, bro.
No, this is the teaser. This is the teaser for you to come by the Light Fair booth.
Okay.
See what we have going on.
Fair enough. But this is absolutely an area that we are investing heavily in, and we're really excited about how this is going to how this whole space is going to change the lighting industry. We want to be a big part of it.
Are you a power over Ethernet guy or are you a Wi-Fi connected company? Which way are you going?
You just weren't going to take no for an answer there, were you?
I never. Well, hey, we're all sales guys here at the end of the day, right?
Stay tuned. Just a couple months away, and we'll.
So you're not going to say whether
supplemental show. We'll do a supplemental show at the at our booth.
Okay, very good. All right, Greg, you got anything else for these guys?
I don't think so. I think it's good overview.
I think that was a good show. Hey, I just want to say one more thing. Thank you very much for supporting the Get a Grip on Lending podcast, Ira and Josh. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
It's our pleasure. You guys are doing a great thing here, so we appreciate the opportunity to talk.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming on the show, guys. Bye for now.
The only other thing I would just like to add it.
Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah, I'll just, you know, I think a lot of what works about Keystone is, you know, from all the way from Ira down to, you know, people in the warehouse or processing orders, really breathing the light made easy. And, you know, in any business, you know, one person can't make it succeed. I'm sure in your businesses as well, it's not just you guys, you know, you have a whole team around you. So, you know, it's definitely built into our culture and the blood of everyone at Keystone that, you know, that customer service has allowed us to really differentiate ourselves. And that's product development to order processing and kind of everywhere in between. So,
you know, every time we try to stop a podcast, we keep going for a bit. So I'm just going to go with that because every show is going this way.
Yeah, please.
So let me ask you this, Ira. So is that like, what is that? Is that a family dynamic culture thing? Like, do you go down to the warehouse and see the people and talk to them? Like, what is it? What are you guys doing there? Because you got a pretty big base. How many employees do you have? How many employees do you have?
We are about 80 or so out of this facility, and then we have you know, number of folks working on the road out of sales offices.
So
outside,
you got it
outside this business.
And how much has that grown in the last 10 years?
A lot. I would say it easily doubled, probably tripled the headcount.
Right. So when other companies are shrinking, other companies are getting out of lighting, they're selling their divisions, your guys are growing. Is it a family? Is it a Greenberg family secret sauce, Thanksgiving party? You guys figure everything out, or what is it that you guys do? What are you doing there?
Honestly,
what's the secret of the Greenberg
super
secret?
Simple. It is, I'll give it away all day long. We listen to the customer, and we know that what makes us different in our customer's eyes is being really easy to work with. So we can say it all day long. We live it and breathe it here. When we hire people, we ask, what can they do to make a difference, to make it easier for our customers? And it, you know, it starts from day one when people join us, and we do things, you know, we have lots of company culture related events every week that kind of help foster this this idea to make you know, Keystone a great place to work, for one, and for two, to be a great place to help our end users, our customers. And it's our philosophy. I mean, everybody here knows it and does whatever it takes to get the customer to make the customer happy.
Well, see, you forgot. Go ahead, Joe. Go ahead, Greg. Go ahead.
I just think it's all about being adaptable, and that's what you guys are, and that's what I think Michael is. That's what I am as a business, and that's what you have to be in lighting right now. The traditional way of doing it is gone.
No, you guys are wrong. Yeah. You're all wrong. You're all wrong. The reality is all
Here
your success, all
go.
Your success is related to your membership in the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, and you put all your people through LS1. That's the number one thing.
I did it. I mean, so there's definitely a large. I mean, I had absolutely no lighting experience prior to joining Keystone, and LS1 was definitely a critical part to, you know, get me from 0 to 60 very quickly. And a lot of our employees have taken it and have felt the same way. No question about it.
Yeah, it's a great training program in all seriousness. So even though I am not going to credit all your success to LS1, Ira, I'm going to say that it was a big part. Hey, guys, I think that's a good note to close on.
We enjoy what we do. We have fun with it. We have fun with our customers. We have fun with our employees, our vendors, and everybody else in between. And I think it shows. I think people want to be around a company that's enjoying what they do. And, you know, that's obviously we've got great products and we can be competitive and all that stuff, but people want to do business with people they enjoy being with. And, that's, you know, that's something that we try to, profess.
I think we need to get Ira into the hospitality lounge at an NAILD convention, Josh. How do we do that?
Invite him.
Yeah, there's a formal invitation right now, next year, 2019, Ira. All right, man. Thanks for coming on the show, guys.
Thanks, guys. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Keystone Technologies. Come on, Silent Hero. Let's do it. Hey, Ira, Josh, thanks for coming on the show. That was fun. It was a good story to hear about, you know, how Keystone started in the 70 years and everything else. Hey, distributors out there listening to this, sales reps out there listening to this, go to KeystoneTech.com, KeystoneTech.com. Come on, man. Greg and I have been dealing with Keystone long before we started this podcast. Why? Because they're easy to deal with. Just like Ira said on the show, light made easy. It's the truth. It's not that we only deal with Keystone. We have other suppliers, but Keystone is a great partner for us. And we think you should check them out. KeystoneTech.com. Remember, Josh Brown took LS1, got his sea legs under him in the lighting business by taking that course. You should too if you're new in the lighting business. Tell your boss, hey, boss, join NILD. Or tell your boss, hey, put me through LS1. Or join NILD on your own because you can be an associate member. We've lowered the price and, bringing new people into the conversation. And some of the people at the last convention that learned the most were all the new members. Go to NAALD.org, that's NAALD.org, for information on joining this association and information about our educational products, NAALD.org. That was episode 18, Get a Grip on Lighting. Thanks, folks.